Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is May 24th, 2016, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Girls Just Want to Have Fun, Not Appendicitis. And our guest skeptic is Dr. Anthony Crocco. Anthony is a pediatric emergency physician and is the medical director and division head of the Division of Pediatric Emergency at McMaster's Children's Hospital. I often refer to him as a PEDS EM superhero, but the S-Gemmers probably know him for his Ranthonies on YouTube. Welcome back to the S-Gem, Anthony.
Ken, it's great to be back. Always a pleasure.
You know, it's been too long since we last had you on the show.
I hear you. I think the last episode I was on was number 127, Suspicious Minds versus Clinical Prediction Rule in Children with Trauma.
That's right. So how are things going with your sketchy EBM project?
Not so bad, although I haven't put a video out in the last couple months. Been busy getting married and dealing with a puppy and all that usual stuff. But I've got a couple on the go that I'm thinking about, and hopefully in the next month or two, we'll have some for your listeners and my followers.
Well, if people haven't checked out Sketchy EBM, they really should. It's fantastic.
Always remember, Ken, to draw your own conclusions.
Ah, love that tagline. So we're going to be discussing sensitivity, specificity, positive predictive value, negative predictive value in this episode. So I was wondering, Anthony, could you give us a quick refresher on those concepts?
Sensitivity, which gives us our true positive rate, is the true positives over true positives plus false negatives.
So this is the probability of a positive test, given that the patient actually has the disease.
Yes, and the specificity, or the true negative rate, is the true negatives over the true negatives plus false positives.
So this is the probability of a negative test, given that the patient does not have the disease.
Correct. The positive predictive value is the true positives over the test outcome positives, which is the true positives plus false positives. And the negative predictive value is the true negatives over the test outcome negatives, or the true negatives plus false negatives.
This is another S-Gem hot off the press edition. We're trying to cut that KT window down, that knowledge translation window down, from over 10 years to less than 1 month. And this time we have a paper from AEM.
It must be a pediatric paper if I'm on the show, Ken.
It is indeed. But we also have the lead author, Dr. Roseanne Scheller. Roseanne is a pediatric emergency physician and assistant professor at the Children's Mercy Hospital and Clinics in Kansas City, Missouri. Her career goals are to improve the quality of emergency care of pediatric patients through improvements of resuscitation and trauma, and research in pediatric emergency management, resuscitation, and violence prevention. Welcome to the S-Gem, Roseanne.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Before we get too far into the show, can you tell us why you were so interested in this research project?
Of course. As I was working as a fellow at Cincinnati Children's Hospital, I wondered how useful the pediatric appendicitis score was in female adolescents. My thought was that in female adolescents, the differential for abdominal pain was so large that a clinical prediction rule for abdominal pain may not perform as well.
So, Roseanne, can you give us a case to set up this episode?
Sure. The case we have today is of a 15-year-old female patient who presents to your emergency department with a chief complaint of abdominal pain. A medical student picks up the chart and comes back to tell you about it. His presentation includes the abdominal pain has been going on for 2 days, has worsened over this time period, and is worse in the right lower quadrant from being previously around her umbilicus. She had a temperature this morning of 101 degrees Fahrenheit, vomited twice this morning, non-bilious, non-bloody, and says bumps in the roads over to your hospital hurt badly and does not want to eat anything. The medical student also tells you she doesn't have dysuria, discharge, diarrhea, or constipation. She's just finished her menstrual cycle and is not sexually active. The medical student tells you that he noticed pain over McBurney's point. He wants to CT scan her. You start to tell him about trying to limit radiation in a pediatric patient and the pediatric appendicitis score, but can't help to wonder, is this clinical prediction rule as helpful in this female adolescent as it is in other pediatric patients?
I think it's probably worth going through some background information on abdominal pain and appendicitis in the pediatric population.
Sure. Abdominal pain is a common complaint in any emergency department, as is true in a pediatric emergency department. Appendicitis is usually on the differential in a pediatric patient presenting with abdominal pain and is a common surgical emergency.
Female adolescents pose a unique diagnostic dilemma due to having competing gynecologic diagnoses, such as UTI, sexually transmitted infections, or ovarian cysts or torsion. Being accurate about diagnosis of appendicitis is important to avoid complications of missed appendicitis as well as complications of negative appendectomies.
Well, the Pediatric Appendix Score, the PAS, is a clinical prediction tool which uses elements of history and physical, such as symptoms of right lower quadrant pain and fever. And it combines this with laboratory findings, such as the white blood cell count, to predict risk of acute appendicitis.
The PAS score was initially developed with a single cutoff, but validation studies showed better performance with two cutoffs, one at the low end to identify patients with a low risk of appendicitis who may not need further evaluation, and one at the high end to identify patients with a high risk of acute appendicitis on clinical grounds alone.
With a possible score of 10, scores at the lower cutoff, such as less than or equal to 2, are used to discharge a patient home without further workup due to low suspicion of appendicitis, thus making sensitivity important at this cutoff.
And scores at the higher end, such as greater than or equal to 7, or even 8, are used to predict high suspicion for appendicitis, thus making specificity important at this cutoff.
There are not any studies to our knowledge that compare the pediatric appendicitis performance on both different ages and genders, which is an important consideration in caring for pediatric patients.
So, Anthony, what's the clinical question?
Well, Ken, I want to know, how well does the pediatric appendicitis score, PAS, perform for adolescent female patients?
And Roseanne, what's your reference?
The reference is Scheller et al., Utility of the Pediatric Appendicitis Score in Female Adolescent Patients. This is hot off the press in Academic Emergency Medicine, May 2016.
All right, so Anthony and I will quickly go through the PICO. What was the population?
Population was female patients, 13 to 21 years old, presenting with symptoms suggestive of appendicitis.
And the intervention?
The intervention was the use of the pediatric appendicitis score.
And the comparison?
Comparison was pathologically proven appendicitis.
And how about the outcome?
The outcome was diagnostic metrics such as sensitivity, specificity, positive predictive value, and negative predictive value, including comparison of these metrics to all other patients presenting with symptoms of appendicitis for whom the PAS was used.
And now we get to Roseanne to read out her actual conclusions.
Our study demonstrates that the PAS score, as commonly used clinically, i.e. with cutoffs of greater than or equal to 3, and with cutoffs of greater than or equal to 8, show better specificity and equivalent sensitivities for female adolescent patients compared to all other patients, as well as a good negative predictive values in both groups.
All right, let's run through the quality checklist for randomized clinical control trials. The first question, Anthony, the clinical problem, is it well-defined?
Yes.
And the study population, is it represent the target population that we'd be interested in?
It does, Ken.
And is the study population included or focused on those in the emergency department?
It does.
And do you think the patients were recruited consecutively?
Unsure on this.
Okay, question 5. The diagnostic evaluation, was it sufficiently comprehensive and applied equally to all patients?
It was.
Were the diagnostic criteria explicit, valid, and reproducible?
They were.
And the reference standard, was it appropriate? Was there no imperfect gold standard?
Yes.
And how about question 8? All undiagnosed patients, did they undergo sufficiently long and comprehensive follow-up?
Unsure, Ken.
Question 9. The likelihood ratios of the tests in question is presented or can be calculated from the information provided.
Yes, Ken. They weren't presented, but they can be calculated from the data.
And the last question, the precision of the measure or diagnostic performance, is it satisfactory?
It is.
So the key results. They had 901 patients with 28% pathology-proven appendicitises. Of the total population enrolled in the study, 30% were adolescent females defined as age 13 to 21.
There was no significant difference in the sensitivity for the cutoff value of 3 or the specificity for the cutoff value of 7. The specificity for the cutoff value of 8 was significantly better in the adolescent female group compared to the pediatric non-adolescent female group.
Now, Anthony, we don't want to get lost in all the numbers here. So I'm going to put up a table on the blog with all the sensitivities, the specificities, the positive predictive values, and the negative predictive values for the different cutoffs. What I'd rather do is talk a little nerdy with Roseanne about her study. And we've got 5 questions that we wanted to go through and clarify about your research project. Okay, Roseanne?
Sounds good.
All right, so question number 1 is about subgroup analysis. This is a retrospective cohort study, effectively a subgroup analysis of a previously done study on the pediatric appendicitis score. Was this study adequately powered for the diagnostic metrics you were investigating?
As we stated in our limitations, it was possible that the sample size in regards to age and sex may not have been sufficient. We did do a prospective power calculation for this study before complete enrollment of the parent study. Using the expected prevalence estimates we had at the time, we determined that 222 female adolescents would allow us to detect a difference in the area under the receiver operating curves for the two groups. Our study included 250 adolescent females.
Well, the second thing we wanted to talk about was consecutive or convenience. The manuscript says that the clinical research coordinators identified a convenience sample of patients. Does this mean it was not consecutive patients presenting with abdominal pain suspected of appendicitis? And if not consecutive, how do you think this may have impacted your results?
Research assistants were present 12 to 18 hours a day and enrolled study patients consecutively during these times. Because of this convenience sample, our results may not have clear generalizability. There may be sample bias and sampling error due to the nature of convenient sampling. It is possible that patients that present during times that the research assistants were not present may be different than patients that present other times of day.
Our third question was about clinical appendicitis pathway. Physicians were given a new clinical appendicitis pathway prior to the start of this study. This diagnostic pathway, which included the PAS, was added to your EMR halfway through the study period. What impact, if any, do you think that might have had on your results?
I think that having the clinical pathway and computerized decision support tool introduced may have increased awareness and may have influenced the physician's considerations and identifications of symptoms, as well as the overall score.
So the fourth thing we wanted to ask you about, Roseanne, was incomplete follow-up. You defined, quote, negative appendicitis, end of quote, to include all patients who did not undergo appendectomy 1 month after emergency department presentation. What about the patients who sought care at another hospital or after 1 month?
We felt it would be likely that a pediatric patient with appendicitis would follow up at our facility because it is the only hospital with pediatric surgeons in our catchment area. 1 month was chosen due to the probability that a case of appendicitis from the ED visit would likely present within 1 month of initial presentation, allowing for full capture of data, even with a delayed presentation or antibiotic therapy. However, this is a potential limitation that we identified in the article.
Our fifth and final question was about positive predictive value and negative predictive values. These are dependent on the prevalence of the disease. The pathology-proven appendicitis in the female adolescent cohort was 16%, while in the comparison group, it was 33%. While this difference does not impact the positive predictive value and negative predictive value that much, did you think about calculating the likelihood ratios, which are not dependent on prevalence of disease?
We had considered likelihood ratios. However, we wanted our study to be comparable to other studies of the PAS, which reported positive predictive values and negative predictive values more often. Additionally, we do report the primary outcomes of sensitivity and specificity, which are not dependent on prevalence and can be used to calculate the likelihood ratios.
Well, those were the five questions we had for you, Roseanne. Is there anything else about this project that you'd like to mention?
I do think this difference in prevalence between the groups is interesting and would like to see research in the future address this discrepancy. One possibility is that adolescent females are more likely to have other abdominal pathology, which may mimic appendicitis, such as urinary tract infections, sexually transmitted disease, or ovarian pathology. So clinicians suspect it and test for it more. Since our study population based on clinical concern for appendicitis, it is possible that we had a high number of adolescent females with other final diagnoses, thus decreasing the prevalence in this group compared to all other patients group.
Well, now we come to the point where we like to compare our conclusions to the author's conclusions. So, Anthony, what do we say?
Well, I'm going to say, Ken, that we agree with the author's conclusions. It appears that the pediatric appendicitis score is at least as good a tool in adolescent female patients as it is for the rest of the pediatric population. Clinicians have the option of using the pediatric appendicitis score or the Alvarado score to help risk stratify children with abdominal pain with regards to appendicitis risk. Both scores require laboratory investigations, specifically a CBC. Neither of these tools is perfect, however, and both should be used with caution. For patients with low risk who are being sent home, adequate discharge planning is paramount. For patients with intermediate risk, clinicians should adopt a strategy of investigation that minimizes radiation exposure.
Well, how about a bottom line then, Anthony?
Bottom line, Ken, the pediatric appendicitis score has similar utility in adolescent female patients compared to other pediatric patients.
And Roseanne, can you resolve the case that you started this podcast with?
Sure. You decide to use the pediatric appendicitis score and find that your patient's score is 8. You quickly evaluate the patient and agree their exam is concerning for appendicitis. As according to your hospital's pathway, you call surgery. They also evaluate the patient and have a concern for appendicitis as well. They decide to admit the patient and take her to the operating room without imaging. Her appendix is taken out and is found to be consistent with appendicitis on pathology report.
So, Anthony, how are you going to take this new study that's hot off the press and apply it clinically?
In children presenting to the emergency department with abdominal pain, where there is a clinical concern for acute appendicitis, the pediatric appendicitis score can be used even if the patient is an adolescent female. Care must be taken, as the pediatric appendicitis score, as well as other clinical decision instruments for pediatric appendicitis, are imperfect decision tools.
So, Anthony, what are you going to tell your patient at the bedside?
I'm going to tell her that we're going to use a score called the pediatric appendicitis score to help us understand their risk of having appendicitis and to guide our testing and treatment.
Well, that sound reminds me that it's time for the Keener contest, and last week's winner was Mark Sontag, who knew that the FDA approved tamsulosin for the treatment of benign prostatic hypertrophy. Roseanne, what Keener question did you come up with this week?
Ken, this is the question I'd like to ask the residents. At what ages can appendicitis present, and what was the youngest reported case?
Well, if you know the age appendicitis can present and what is the youngest reported case, then send your answer to the SGM at Gmail with Keener in the subject line. The first correct answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. Well, that's it for another edition of the SGM Hop, or Hot Off the Press. But I have a special guest to tell us about what you can do next to participate in this knowledge translation project.
Hello, SGEMers. My name is Dr. Jeff Klein, and I am the Editor-in-Chief of Academic Emergency Medicine. We at AEM are really interested in engaging the emergency medicine community and to find out what you think about this SGEM Hop episode. What questions do you have for Dr. Scheller and her team on the pediatric appendicitis score? Join the conversation on Twitter at #SGEMHOP, on Facebook, or the SGEM blog. The best social media feedback will be published in AEM.
Thanks, Anthony, for providing your PEDS EM expertise to another edition of the SGEM.
Happy to participate, Ken, as always.
And the PEDS episodes, they are always very, very popular. We need to do another one soon.
Yeah, for sure. You know what? I think you and I have one lined up, and I think we're going to record in Dublin. Isn't that right?
Yeah, we're going to do a show at Smack on juice.
Yep, Dublin's a good place to drink juice.
Now, the question everybody always asks me, though, is when are you going to do another rant?
Well, you know what, Ken? I've actually got one that I've tried, the Mark 1 version, which we did in Missouri at SGEM Live. It went okay, but I want to do some tweaking, and hopefully we'll have that out by the end of CAPE.
Super. And I want to thank you, Roseanne, for coming on the show and helping us cut that knowledge translation window down from over 10 years to less than 1 month on this SGEM Hop episode.
Thank you. Glad to be invited.
Well, you know what? As the guest, you get to give the SGEM tagline.
Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next time.